Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and a very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. John Clark. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good, and it's good to hear you on such a clear line. John, first of all, condolences of all the people who've spoken today. Nell McCafferty was very much part of your life, and I want to go straight, as Nell would do, to something I read in your book. And this is what propelled us to go looking for you and ask you, would you participate?
Okay.
You wrote in your book, Finucane and Me, there is one incident, I think it was a Thursday afternoon. Nell arrived down to near in Westmead where you lived at the time, and she basically told you you were drunk to get out of the house. Yeah. This was the end. Get out of the house, and she got you into John of God's or a rehab.
That's true, yeah.
Did Nell McCafferty save your life?
Yeah, without shadow of a doubt. I'm sitting here with a photograph of Nell and I taken years ago, you know?
Yeah.
And can I talk, yeah?
Of course you can, loud and clear.
I'm looking at her with great sadness, you know?
Yeah.
I was the oldest lemon in that pack, you know?
Yeah.
I'm 88, and there was Marion, she disappeared, died. Nell is gone now, Nuala went there, and I'm 20 years old and a lot of them, and it's a very strange thing to be the last one standing. You know?
And they feature.
I find it just extraordinary, you know.
And tell us about Nell McCafferty. Tell us, you knew her so well, yourself and Marion Finucane, obviously Nuala O'Faolan. I think Mary Holland, who's also passed, was part of that.
Yeah.
That group down in
Nell was a terrible, naive, innocent sort of woman. Now, people wouldn't agree with that, you know.
Okay.
But the Nell I knew was, you know. And I used to meet fellas and said, Jesus, stay away from her, she'd eat you, you know.
Yeah.
And she would, you know. I mean, she liked me in the thick of a fray, but she was very naive and quite innocent of how the world worked, you know. But the feminist cause in her was a marriage made in heaven. If you take Nuala just for a second, Nuala was an intellectual feminist, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Nell led from the heart, an entirely different approach to it, you know. And she was a softy. But she loved controversy, and she loved to be in the thick of controversy of any nature. You know, she was always also a very dangerous friend to go around. I was looking at her. She and I, and Marion and Nuala were in Istanbul just when they blew up the markets there. You know, it was when the Kurds were at it, and they're all shoeshine boys. And Nell kept saying to the shoeshine boys, where was your daddy last night? And I said, well, the other words that I won't broadcast, but shut up anyhow, you know. We could end up in jail with this sort of talking to Kurds about where was your daddy last night, you know. But she was very close to people who were in the bombing business, as you know, because her mammy lived next door to Martin McGuinness's mammy.
Yeah.
So she was born in that particular era, but in affairs of the heart and affairs of the world, you know, she was a wonderful, naive feminist, if you wish, but human being.
Yeah.
You know, in all sorts.
But did you take, when Nell stood over you that day and said, John, this is the end,
Yeah.
We can't. And she's speaking on behalf of Marion, obviously, and your children. This can't go on. You're lying on the floor. I think it was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You write about this so candidly and beautifully in the powerful, powerful book. What was your reaction to Nell? Did you resist her and say, get lost, leave me alone?
No.
Okay.
No. I just said, you're right, I'm out. Yeah. And life turned into a very different life after that, you know. Yeah. A great life.
Yeah.
But no, it was straight up. She said it as a friend. I knew and trusted her as a friend. And I knew I was over the top. So I just said, right, that's it. I'm gone. So that was 30-something years ago. Anyhow, a lot of water has flowed under the bridge since then.
But it's a remarkable, it's a remarkable piece. And you said, of the five of you that were in the house, and I think Nuala and Nell and Mary Holland, to a lesser extent, but they used to come down at the weekend. And Nuala and Marion and Mary would go off walking, and yourself and Nell would sit drinking.
Yeah. Well, that was a reasonable association, yeah. The other thing they did, which I always thought was fascinating, do you remember there was a big television program there with Ellie and J.R. Ewing?
Oh, yeah, Dallas.
Yeah.
Go on.
Well, Nell and Nuala watched Dallas. Okay. I think it might have been on a Friday night.
Okay.
And it came down to us on Saturday. And as far as we could establish, they must have been watching two different programs, you know. And Dallas might have been great, but Nell and Nuala's version of what Dallas was superb, you know.
I can imagine.
And then Mary Holland.
There's one great vignette. John, I remember about Nuala and Nell, and it was Nell talking about when they would go on holidays, and they would have a limit. There was no Kindle in those days. They would have a limited number of books.
Yeah.
And what they would do is, if Nell would start one book and read three chapters, she would tear out the three chapters and give that to Nuala, so Nuala could be shortly behind. It was it's an incredible image of affection. Were you around, John? I know you were, so why am I at? You were around when Nell and Nuala split.
Yeah. It was a disaster. It was certainly a disaster for Nell.
Yeah.
Her world was just taken away, you know. And she didn't know why.
Yeah.
You know, and I won't go too far into the detail, but she just didn't know why.
Yeah.
And at that stage, Nuala's book in America had started to take off, and she was lecturing in Harvard, and she was lecturing here, there, and everywhere, you know. Yeah. And Nell was never the same after that, ever. And if something, the light of your light walks out the door and you don't know why, it leaves too many questions unanswered, you know. And I think to the day she, well, not died, but before she got Alzheimer's or whatever she had, you know, she was forever looking for an explanation without any success, you know. Yeah. So it was very sad. But
I tell you a little thing about, which is back in, I remember the day exactly, because it was back in 2009.
Yeah.
I happened to be, the reason I remember it, John, is that I was knocked down the following day. Okay. I was in London with my kids. We were actually, I was bringing them around the House of Commons, would you believe? For some reason, I was dragging them around the House of Commons.
Yeah. And I
got a phone call from Nell.
Yeah.
And Nell wanted something. And then we established contact. And I'd known her anyway from the program. But she subsequently rang me, John, and it must be one of the saddest phone calls I ever got. And you've articulated that sadness of a breakup so eloquently.
Yeah.
And Nell said to me, do you know where Nuala is buried? Because she happened to be buried. I'd mentioned that she happens to be buried in Kilbarrick Graveyard, which Kilbarrick Graveyard, not many people know this. It's out beyond Clontarf. It's on the seafront, just beyond Causeway in Clontarf. And Nell, I was baffled, and I could hear the sadness in her voice. And she said, can you tell me how to get to Kilbarrick Graveyard? And I did. But that was one of the. But you saw them. You saw them in, with such joy, and such convivial and intelligence and brightness, and that was a truly remarkable group, the five of you. But you were the last man standing.
Yeah, which is bizarre, you know, with my particular track record of this, that, and the other, and as I said. I don't know what age Nuala was. She'd be 80 now, I guess. What age is Nell, do you know?
Nell was 80. 8 years younger. 8 years younger than you, old pal.
All right.
Now, you're sorry. And, put it another way, John. You're 8 years older.
And Marion was 70-something or other. Yeah. You know, she shouldn't have gone at all, you know. But
Marion
the
was,
Lord doesn't think
Marion would be 70-something now. Marion would be around 74 now. God rest her.
Yeah.
And, and Nell, by the way, Nell, let's not gild the lily here, John. Nell could speak her mind and had no fear of giving out to you, to your face, or.
Without shadow of a doubt, you know. Can I tell you one vignette about it, which I always thought was interesting? Marion, when she was on your program, or when she was
Live
doing it before you.
It's her program.
Yeah.
I'm on her program.
All right. Oh, I was being polite, I think. but a woman rang in. Mm-hmm. It was the row over condoms, you know?
Yeah.
And a woman rang in to say that she had gone to see her confessor and she was worried about condoms. And sometimes she had four kids and didn't want any more. And sometimes she felt amorous.
Okay.
And what should she do? Right. And the advice the cleric gave her was that she should get out of bed immediately and hop round for 10 minutes and then get back into bed and she wouldn't feel so amorous. And Nell couldn't get over this and she spent the night hopping round on one leg to see whether she would or wouldn't get amorous, you know?
John, listen to this piece, John. This is Nell. And it's one of the few occasions, I think, publicly. She's with Brenda Donoghue, so Brenda's brilliant at getting stuff out of people. This is Nell, back home in Derry, talking about realising when she was gay and when she told her confessor. This is Nell, the late Nell McCaffrey.
Confession one day. I was 14. I was in love with this girl and I was kissing her and I told the priest this and I wanted God's help to help me stop because I understood the church didn't approve. They thought it was a sin. And at the end, the priest said, you must promise never to do it again. And I said, well, I promise to try never to do it again. He said, you must never do it again. And I said, if I knew I wasn't going to do it again, I wouldn't be here looking for God's help. And he said, say you'll never do it again, you get no absolution. And I said, well, cheerio then. Not quite as simple as cheerio. I left that confessional devastated. That was 14. I never went back again, not in any spiritual sense. No, not in any Catholic sense. Mm. I sometimes call into churches. Mm. But when I was 17 and I was still troubled, I went up to the convent to my favourite nun, Sister Agatha, the one who taught me here in the wee nuns, and said, dear, I'm gay, I need help. And she said, I wouldn't have got that, hold on. And she went and got the head nun, Mother Gertrude. And I said, I'm gay. And she said, well, you might have to live with that for the rest of your life. And I thought, this was a wonderful thing to say to me, because she didn't say you're wrong. She went on to find a woman's grip. So those two nuns gave me their benediction.
Isn't that wonderful?
I could believe that.
Yeah.
I could believe that, you know.
And John, the other part of your book, which again is so powerful because it was in itself, it was so tragic, and that is the death of your daughter, yourself and Marion's daughter, Sinead, from leukemia back in 1990. And Nell was around a lot then, wasn't she, according to your book?
All the time. Yeah, all the time, you know. And a great support in, I don't know in what way, but being there was the support, you know, and caring, I suppose, you know. And the only downside of it was that Nell offered to cook for you, you know.
Okay.
And that was a disaster.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Oh, Jesus. I took Nell to a cooking class.
Okay.
She couldn't cook.
Right.
And all the other students that it was a chance for chefs were thrilled with Nell. She burnt everything, spilled everything.
Great.
Forgot to turn on or off the oven, depending on her humor, you know. She was great fun, you know. I then, of course, would fly at some of the males there for being anti-women and anti-feminist and so on. But that was Nell.
Would she check you? I'm not saying she'd any reason to, but would she check you?
She checked anybody. Okay. But actually, I was the sort of a low-grade card-carrying feminist, you know.
Okay.
Because I'd grown up in matriarchies, you know, and the woman ruled the house and the world as far as I could see, you know. So it wasn't something new, knowing strong women, strong independent women, you know. I used to get dragged along to various meetings with Marion and so on, you know. And Nell was always there, cheering on the troops, you know.
You smoked, she smoked, Marion smoked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Were you all smokers, by the way? Did Nuala smoke?
Nuala gave him up.
That's joking. And now stay with us, John, and it's great that we have you on WhatsApp,
okay.
And I really appreciate your time. Stay with us, but listen to the great A.D. Roach, because I met A.D. recently at an event, and we were talking about Nell. And A.D., good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Great to talk to you, Joe. I mean, heartfelt condolences, may I say that first, to John and to all of Nell's family and wide circle of friends. You know, I have to say, there's a part of me that's heartbroken, but there's also, I suppose, a part of me, Joe, that's relieved because I saw how reduced Nell became, you know, under the influence of that illness, that terrible illness of Alzheimer's. And I'd actually only recently been up to see her with Ali Hewson,
my
friend and campaigner. We'd been up to see her in June. So I was listening to John's stories there, and I have so many, I suppose, different stories we can tell and different maybe experiences with Nell, because I wouldn't have known her as well as we say John and Marion did. I kind of admired her for many years, like as this fearsome, powerful voice, a very courageous, I suppose, really a trailblazer and an advocate.
Well, let's begin.
That's
been in one way well covered, correct, rightly so. But what struck me the day I met you, which is about 2 months ago, and you said you had just been up yourself and Ali Hewson had just been up to see Nell in Lochswilly Nursing Home, I think it was, up where she was resident at the time. And you tell us, if you can, please, tell us about that visit.
Sure. I have to say, I hadn't seen Nell for quite some time, but I was aware that she hadn't been well. And I was chatting with Ali one day, and we said, look, for old time's sake, because we had travelled together to Chernobyl in the back of an ambulance and everything. And we went on, and Ali and myself decided to go on a road trip up to reunite, you know, the three musketeers, as we called ourselves in the ambulance, that we'd be reunited with her for a brief visit to Lochswilly.
Well
but
done.
Just as we were turning into the nursing home was lovely and really nice, caring staff there. But just before we turned in, we spotted a sign by Lochswilly that said, "Welcome to Lochswilly, the home of amazing grace," the song.
Ah.
And of course, Nell knew the story so well, yeah. which was that story of redemption and anti-slavery. And when we went in and saw Nell, we showed her the photograph that we took of the two of us standing at the sign. And then we gently sang that song to her. And she had, you know, Nell had very disarming smile and beautiful, yeah, yeah. searing blue eyes. And you know, she briefly was very present in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I think, I suppose, we did it as much for ourselves as for Nell. Yeah. And she knew both of us. Like, initially she looked and I said, Nell, it's Adie Roach and it's Ali Hewson. And she smiled away saying, Adie Roach, Ali Hewson. And then, you know, we started to try and kind of open up a conversation mm-hmm. with her. And we were remembering some of our trips together just to see if it would stimulate anything in her memory. And we spoke about, well, I spoke to her about how terrified I was of meeting her for the first time, because I only knew her as yeah. a formidable force of nature. And she had contacted our office to say that she wanted to travel to Chernobyl as yeah. a journalist. She said, I want to see this for myself. I want to unpick what's it all about.
Brilliant.
You know, I you have to prove it to me, kind of thing. So I said, well, look, Nell, you know, if you'd like to come, Ali and I are driving an ambulance. And mm-hmm. in fact, we're going to be in a huge convoy, which is a 3-kilometer long convoy, the longest convoy to cross Europe since the end of the Second World War. Okay. And she said, count me in.
Right.
Then she had a huge problem with her back and she ended up in hospital.
Okay.
And eventually they told her not to travel. But Nell being Nell, just give me the tablets. I'm going on this convoy.
Yeah.
So we brought her down to the dock and sat her into the back of the ambulance, laid her out on a stretcher. And there she lay pretty much for the following 7 days.
Wow.
As Ali drove, I was a co-pilot. Uh-huh. Nell stretched out in the back singing wonderful. She introduced me actually to Elvis. I was never a fan okay. before, but I was a fan after 7 days living in a bubble of this ambulance where we had to sleep and eat every single day. And also, it's where I suppose she awakened a deeper political mm-hmm. mind for both Ali and myself, because like she had a very disarming way of kind of poking out of you what you thought about
yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah.
And like most of us down south, we never really at that stage talked about Northern Ireland, and because we didn't want to be deemed, you know, we say followers of the IRA or something like that. So we had lots of kind of questions mm-hmm. and dichotomies for ourselves. And she helped to tease those things out with both Ali and myself and herself. And she kind of unpick your thoughts, give it back to you and help you to kind of hold it in a different way, in a different light, coming from her kind of background. So we kind of recalled that story to her again. And you know something, I showed her a photograph, Joe, of herself in a radiation protection outfit with a big protection mask and holding a radiation Geiger counter of her fearless journey into the Chernobyl exclusion zone, where she did an interview for BBC television yeah. and then she did an interview for Jerry Ryan.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
she broadcast back every single day. And I always remember one of the things that she said that day. She said, what I am seeing here is the beginning of the end of the world.
Wow.
You know, the capacity of that, the genie out of the bottle kind of thing. But we recalled that to her, and we had a little small bit of another song, which is Blue Suede Shoes, because that was one of the ones that she loved and sang along. And I suppose, really, Joe, I'd like to remember her yeah. best as that authentic, yeah. Very, you know, a sort of fearless self. And I loved, you know, some of John's recollections there, because I always saw Nuala, Marion, Mary and Nell as, you know, the stellar, brilliant generation of idealistic women, really, mm-hmm. who were politicized by, you know, their sex, class and also by war. And they, I suppose, changed the nature of, you know, what we now are having the benefits of in Ireland, because all of those women had laser sharp minds and focus. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I that's what I really would like to remember of Nell. She never shied away from anything. And she is someone that I was honored to know And while I was terrified of her initially, like John mentioned, you know, she really was very soft-hearted and had great compassion. And
tell us about I'll stay with you, don't worry, but tell us about yourself, Ali and Nell, going to a Blondie concert.
Oh my God. I tell you, when we went up to see Nell, we were trying to, Ali and I were kind of saying, what kind of things might kind of, you know, get her to waken up a little bit in her memory. Mm-hmm. And we were recalling with Nell, you know, we did have great fun times besides all the serious work that was going on. But one time Ali treated us to a Blondie concert in the Olympia. And of course, it wasn't just any old Sia Khan inside the theatre. Yeah, yeah. We had a box, first and last time in a box. So the three of us were sitting pretty, and we'd had an old glass of champagne or two before we went there, so we were in fine fettle. And Nell, of course, knew every single song. And actually, I had promised Nell on the last visit that I'd get her a poster of Blondie, which, unfortunately, I didn't manage to get her in time. But the story we recalled was this. Somehow, Nell had got a bunch of red roses, and because she was a big fan, and the next minute anyway, up Nell got in high dungeon and threw a red rose onto the stage, which landed at Blondie's feet. And mid-song, without a blink of an eye, she picks up the red rose, which had a long stem, put it between her teeth and pulled it through and pulled off the head of the rose and blew out the petals into the audience as she looked up at Nell.
Fantastic.
So we recalled that as one of our fun nights out.
Okay, but you also, did you say to me at the start, AD, that there's, haven't seen her, you're the person I've heard of all the people I heard today, you're the person who's seen her most recently. That there was a sense of sadness. Eddie. Yes, John, of course. Come in, John.
Can I interrupt Eddie for a second? Eddie, I ended up in a Turkish belly dancing club in Istanbul with Nell. All right. And it was a very seedy joint.
John. Speak freely. You're in your grannies. Go ahead. I'm looking forward to this.
And the belly dancer, very lithe and rather beautiful woman, did her belly dance up on the table. And Nell insisted that she wanted to do a belly dance as well.
Okay.
And climbed up on the table, you know.
Yes.
And I said to Marion and Nuala and Nell, as she was clambering up on the table, "I'm out. You want to get your throat cut here? You're on your own, and forget the feminist movement." So, anyhow, Nell got up and did her belly dance, which was appalling to watch, and fell off the table. And everybody laughed, and we all came home safely and happy, you know.
Okay, stay.
That was my life.
Okay, stay with us, John Clark. This is John Clark. And A.D. Roach, and we'll be back after this break. Joe at rt.ie, 51551, text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
John, can I ask you, that image of Nell belly dancing in a dodgy Turkish emporium in Istanbul, and the whole image again from your book, and from knowing this, a fair bit of the story about the four of you, especially yourself, Marion, Nell and Nuala, and your travels together. Did you ever talk about mortality?
No. You have to be at a certain level of age, I think, that you take mortality seriously. You know, it'll happen, but it's sometime in the future, you know. When you sort of get on to my level, you're looking at it daily, so to speak.
Yeah.
But it makes life more richer in a certain way. You know, I work every day now, and I'm busy all the time, and I just love the idea of being alive, you know. But I'm very much aware that the Reaper isn't too far away, you know.
Yeah. And you see, today, Well, up to now, I think. Today, we've had the memories of the public now. And a lot of people have spoken about her, knew her through her public life in discourse and writing and journalism and radio and television. What's your image? John, what is your description of now? What is your...
Oh, I bet.
If you were to choose the words, I know you'll check me because you often do. Let's choose the words. If you were to choose the words for Nell's obituary or Nell's headstone.
Yeah, I would have thought she died too soon, but that's... Yeah. She... When Nuala left, Nell died, you know, in her heart. And there was no getting away from that. The lights went out, you know. Yeah. And whatever sort of a life she was making, she was hobbling by, you know. There was nothing there because Nuala gave her the excitement of ideas, you know, which Nell didn't have. And then Nell go into attack mode, you know, for any passing non-feminist that she could see. And she was contentious. She loved publicity. Yeah. She loved the limelight.
That's allowed, yeah.
She's what you might call human, you know?
Yeah.
And
but I'm thinking,
she was just...
John, if I can do this just for a sec, given that you've mentioned that. When Nuala knew she was dying, as we all know, and she didn't just write about it, she died in 2008, but shortly before she died, she gave that incredible interview to...
With Marion.
Okay?
Yeah.
And she told Marion, I don't want more times. As soon as I heard I was going to die, the goodness went from life. That's 2008.
Yeah.
So Nuala does this interview with Marion. And do you know how Nell reacted?
I don't. I do know there was complexities in it in one sense that they did it in a studio in Galway.
I remember that,
And Marion said to Nuala, I can't do this interview with you if we don't have a table between us. Otherwise, it's too close and it's too intimate. And I start crying and you'll start crying and we won't have an interview. And of course, Nuala, who was a great intellectual, if you wish, laid out her stall as what she thought life and death was about.
Yeah.
But can I tell you just one other story about Nell?
Of course.
On Nell's 60th birthday, I'd say it was about then anyhow, Nuala said, well, what would you like to do? And Nell said, I'd like to go to Timbuktu.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's in West Africa, and it's a war zone, and it's an appalling place, you know. So they set off to Timbuktu.
Right.
And they have that West African mosquito there.
Okay.
And it's deadly. Well, if you get a bite, you're dead. It's simple as that. There's no messing. And when she got home, she thought she had the flu, and she was very lucky with whatever GP she had. But the guy said, weren't you in Africa or somewhere like that? And she said she was in West Africa. And he rang immediately, didn't let her out. And I went in to see her that night. And she was wrapped in tin foil, you know, wrapped in tin foil, and with about 10 fans blowing on her. They were trying to freeze her. And they said, if she makes it through the night, she might live. But otherwise, if she doesn't, she's dead. So Nell came terribly, terribly close to dying when she was 60. Really, really close, you know. And that's Timbuktu.
And John, but that was Nell and Nuala. Did you ever fall out with Nell?
No.
No, I thought that. You had your differences, I presume. Differences,
endless.
Difference with a capital D, and probably
endless.
all caps.
Yeah.
And would you talk to her about Northern Ireland? Would you talk to her about the politics of the day, would you disagree?
No, I didn't disagree. Nuala did. But, see, Nuala had worked in England a lot.
Yeah.
And sort of knew the English and took a different view. And she didn't like violence,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
The IRA could make a case, you know? And I, to my knowledge now, and this is before I knew Nell, the North of Ireland was a socialist movement, you know, mm-hmm. housing and toilets and all that sort of stuff, and suddenly morphed into a war zone, you know. And Nell was very close to all these people, and she saw it as all-out war, you know, and didn't have any problem about that. England had been terribly good to Nuala, you know.
Okay.
She won an Oxford scholarship. She was invited by the BBC to set up the Open University, which she did with a heart and a half,
okay.
which educated thousands of people. So she had a far different view of the North of Ireland. She was very short in the history then. Then she went up to write about them. She thought they were a very dull lot, and the only people who were interested were the IRA, and she wouldn't write about them. So they fell out endlessly about that, you know. Yeah. And
but funnily enough, you're the only one in all the various eulogies today. You're the only one who, I mean, is that a contradiction in one's life, in anyone's life, that on the one hand, you're a member of the Women's Liberation Movement, which is totally in the last 100 years since the suffragettes, and the suffragettes were in an especially different time in terms of not even having to vote, let alone anything else.
Yeah.
But on the one hand, being a member of the Women's Liberation Movement and the whole thing about the contraceptive train and the whole, there was a fun in it, there was a pacifist element, there was a non-violence element in it, as you know. And then on the other hand, as you say, she was born in Derry and born out of that that culture. Yeah. And so on the one hand, armed struggle, and on the other hand, very much, and it's the predominant, if not the dominant, sorry, if not the total sense today in all the eulogies to her, that there's no mention of the fact that Nell had an issue and a support, maybe with a small s, for what Martin McGuinness was doing up north.
Yeah, yeah. I find that terribly understandable, you know. Why wouldn't she, you know? And where she came from and her background and the fact that, well, we won't go into all the stuff. I can understand that completely, you know.
John, how are you? We have a here's a clip of Nell talking about making petrol bombs, again with our Brenda.
In terms of the Bogside, we were shabby genteel because my grandfather was the police sergeant in the Bog. He ran the police station, which was eventually closed down because there wasn't enough crime to justify it.
I'd say he'd be busy now.
Well, the first time I saw my mother manning a petrol bomb station during the Battle of Bogside, my father couldn't come, he was paralysed, he'd had a stroke. And they were making petrol bombs and we weren't doing it very well. You know, not organised. My mother then takes charge of took a sheet from this very bed, walked down, tore it in strips to put the stopper on the petrol bomb. And I said, "Mommy, you're attacking me, Daddy. You know, your father's police." She said, "My father was a good cop. Here, take this petrol bomb."
Yeah. You know, I mean, she could laugh as well at this sort of madness, you know.
And she also said at one stage, and this only came out recently through Sam McBride, who's a powerful journalist with the Belfast Telegraph, and she said there was, Nell, and one of this is going way back, is in the British archives. Sam has been going through the British archives almost single-handedly unearthing incredible stuff, but this is all history. And this is a memo from John Dew, deputy head of mission at the British Embassy in Dublin.
Yeah.
And he'd been talking to Nell, and he said, "Nell, I was in close personal touch with the Sinn Féin leadership, specifically with Martin McGuinness and Michelle McLaughlin." She and Nell, as you know, was extraordinarily close to her mother. And she said that there was no alternative to Provo punishment beatings. Punishment beatings, and she went on, punishment beatings now are less severe. And she claimed that that nobody had been permanently deprived of the use of a limb recently. And the embassy official wrote, she has shown in the past that our links with the Sinn Féin leadership in Derry, at least, are very genuine. And she renewed her offers to put me in direct touch with them. But which I refuse. So on the one hand, we have this incredible ability of Nell to network and get, and then on the, and again, as I say, she said, would you argue that Nell is trying to explain to this British official when she said the provost had no alternative to punishment beatings? What she's trying to get him to understand what's going on up there.
Yeah, and she probably wasn't the best to explain it, you know, because she was so involved in it. But I always thought it was amusing when the peace talks were going on and all that sort of stuff, and they hang on. So Nell went up every day to see her mum. She was in bad health, then, I think, the mother. And then she come back down to us in Westmeath, you know.
Yeah.
And we'd say, well, how are the peace talks going, Nell? And she said, well, my mammy was talking to Martin McGuinness's mammy, and they're not there yet.
Incredible.
So, run by the mammies in the Bogside, you know.
Maybe if the politics up the north had been run by the mammies all along, we wouldn't have had the 4,000 people dead.
I would think so.
John, how are you? John, how are you? How's your Zen garden going, which you're always ringing me about? The Zen garden.
I need another 40 years for stage one.
Okay, granted.
Yeah, granted. Well, that's fair enough. I just need that. It's going well. The Zen, as you know, as far as I'm concerned, is you live in the now. That's the only time you have. And I endorse that as a philosophy. Not a religion, by the way. It's an entirely different idea, you know. And I endorse the other. I mean, the Christians have the great sermon on the mount, you know, blessed are the meek, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody pays a blind bit of attention to it and get on with their lives. But it is a good one. And the Zen one of you only have now, for me, is a great philosophy, because that's all I have. So every day is a great day.
How's your health?
I'm in remission from cancer.
Yeah.
From a lifetime of smoking since I was about 12. I have obviously COPD, which causes troubles. And I think of all sorts of other things. Maeve Binchy and her mates used to drink in Dorky, as you know.
Yeah.
And Maeve had a lot of illnesses. And she used to say to her friends, we will have an organ recital for 3 months. Or three minutes, rather. And then we'll forget it. And we get on with more important things.
And you begin with, how's your kidneys? How's your lungs? How's your heart? How's your... The organs.
And then forget it. Okay. That's what you got. Now get on and live, you know. And that's my view of life.
Okay, stay with us, please, John, if you can. And you're on a great line. AD, how are you doing, AD?
Oh, well, listen, I'm not too bad. I'm listening to all of John's great stories there.
Yeah.
But if I could just even say for you know, at a personal level, you know, things that I got from Nell, because sometimes I would be very anxious and nervous, and I sort of find it hard to put my head above the parapet and to speak out on an issue that might be not the mainstream, point of perspective. Mm-hmm. And Nell taught me, I suppose, not to be afraid, to advocate for what you believe in, and also to have hope. I mean, while John spoke about Nell and her naivety, I actually saw that as something else. I saw it as Nell and others, you know, and I hope I'm including myself in this, that we believe, you know, the power of believing, and also in understanding that really that ordinary voices matter. Like Nell had that capacity, and she used the power of her pen and her intellect, and she allowed whole generations of us to believe that actually maybe we matter too, and that we should keep on fighting the good fight by being our authentic selves, because Nell was always her authentic self. And, you know, that's what I take away from Nell's life.
Come back to that image, which there is a movie in this, or a play or a book, Adi, Ali and Nell, and this convoy, biggest convoy to go across Europe since the end of the Second World War. You, Adi Hewson driving, it's her wedding anniversary today, as you know, Adi. Ali driving, Adi in the passenger seat, and Nell stretched out in the back singing Elvis songs. Did you talk politics? Did you fight? Did you argue? Because you're a well-known pacifist.
Indeed, Ali would be too. Like, we'd both be firm believers in, you know, the philosophies of Gandhi and Martin Luther King and, you know, the nonviolent revolution, really. But you know what? We did, you know, but we kind of agreed to differ. Okay. Like, we laughed an awful lot.
But did you? I get the sense
spoke about the issues.
Yeah, I get the sense that you would learn from Nell.
100%, because I mean, Nell had a unique perspective, I suppose, on, you know, particularly on living in the bogside in the middle of a war in Northern Ireland. And Ali and I had two very different perspectives. Again, I actually came from a very Republican, old Republican and Athenian background, which was different again to Ali's background, and quite a contrast. And so you had the three of us really kind of, you know, bringing different experiences and different histories. But, you know, we kind of had a mutual respect and we always had a great ability to listen to one another. And I did get a greater understanding of, you know, Nell's perspective on the north of Ireland. And she began, I think, too, also to learn, you know, a bit more about our perspective of believing in the power of the possible through nonviolence and, you know, and in peaceful resolution, like the power of dialogue and diplomacy. I mean, Nell was great at that, at bringing people together and getting us sort of out of our cozy spaces on issues and in beginning to see things from the other side. Because I think in any war situation, like no resolution, and this, it's the same for Gaza and Ukraine and all of the current horrendous wars that are going on, unless you can see it from the perspective of the perceived enemy, we will never learn, or we will never be able to achieve peace. So we used to have those kind of philosophical discussions.
Yeah, okay.
And like, we were all deeply committed to our beliefs, and, you know, we were kind of unwavering in a way, but we also began to be able to understand other perspectives. And I think that gets you to a deeper understanding of one another, and that's how deep friendship is also formed. And that's how we were able to survive in our bubble in an ambulance. I was not just a passenger, Joe. I had the map.
That's
I had to read that to make sure we were on the right route. God help us. I'm hopeless for directions. But Nell, of course, was full flight and eloquence and taking us on that journey.
Could anyone defeat the triumvirate of Adi Roach, Ali Hewson and Nell McCafferty approaching a checkpoint in an ambulance, in a battered ambulance? Could anyone stop you? I doubt it. I doubt it.
Well,
they might try.
A few tried to stop us actually at various borders.
Tried.
And Nell, with her bad back, got out and she berated these guys, even though she hadn't a word of Russian, hadn't a word of Polish, a word of Ukrainian. They knew that she was one hell of an angry woman and was a force not to be messed with. And we always got through all the borders when we set Nell on the border guards.
Okay, stay with us. And John is staying with us as well, John Clark. And we've more people want to join in after this break. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Just Aidan, you've a story about meeting Nell and Nuala. What happened?
Yeah, good afternoon, Joe. It's 40 years ago now, and I was a student in Galway, and I was hitching back to Galway after the weekend. And this battered blue Toyota Corolla pulled in.
Okay.
And Nell McCafferty stuck her head out the window and said, "Get in." And I recognised Nell immediately.
Okay.
Got into the car, which was a wasteland of smoke and detritus in the back.
Yes.
And she introduced me to Nuala O'Qualoin.
Okay.
And we started on the journey from Castlebar to Galway. And Nell asked me, what do you do? And I said, I'm a student. She said, I know that, but what do you do otherwise? Well, I said, I'm a long distance, I do a lot of long distance running.
Okay.
And she said, do you?
Yes.
And I said, yes, I do. And she said, we were thinking of that. And
okay.
What do you need? And I said, well, you know, a T-shirt, pair of shorts, but very comfortable trainers, runners. And she said, really? And we've talked about running. Now, I enjoyed running, but I wasn't Ian O'Riordan or anyone like that, or yeah. Greg Allen, indeed. I just enjoyed running. But from Castlebar to Galway, we spoke about nothing other than running.
Okay.
But when we got into Galway, she said, yes. Would you help me buy a pair of runners?
Okay. Is this Nuala or Nell? I'm confused. Is this Nuala or Nell?
No, well, Nuala was kind of, Nell was buying the runners, and Nuala was kind of saying she'd go along for the trip.
Okay. Okay.
And there was a great sports shop in Eglinton Street in Galway. And I said, come on, we'll go in there. And so we went in and bought the runners, and both women bought the runners. And I said, I can help you put them on. And she said, no, I can do that myself.
Right.
And then after that, they just were gone. And that was the end
okay.
of it. But what struck me about the journey
right.
to Galway
yes.
was, now, I didn't know an awful lot when I was back then, but the warmth, the ease, the love between these two women was quite extraordinary. Here was a 25-year-old random male sitting in the back of the car.
Yeah.
Talking about running, and these two women loving the conversation, loving the fun, happy with each other, incredibly at ease with each other. And looking back now, it would be for me a very good working definition of love.
Yeah. Okay. Well remembered and well articulated. Aiden, John Clark, did Nell ever run around the grounds of Westmead? Did she ever take you out for a...
I was just listening to that man, you know.
Aiden, yeah.
And the Live Line had a marathon for women today or whatever it was,
okay.
you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They went into training. And I was sponsoring Nell.
Okay.
And Nell said to me, as we walked down to the start of this marathon, you know, have we broken the barrier yet? And I said, what barrier? Oh, she said, when you run.
The wall.
And we were walking, by the way, and smoking. She thought she had run through the barrier at this stage, you know. So Nell's idea of running and jogging, you know, was having another cigarette and thinking about it, you know. She did run for 100 yards and gave it up. And I gave her a bottle of water, told her she'd gone through the barrier, and we had another smoke, and that ended the marathon running.
Yeah. How you know, do you,
there and then.
John, given that you knew her so well, how do you think Nell would sit or hear all the eulogies today?
Well, do you remember, he was a great man, Mickey Mullins, the trade union
leader. Yeah, of course
leader.
I do, yes, yeah.
Well, his mates decided they would throw a party for him.
Okay.
Before he died.
All right.
He was awake. And the idea was that they would say what they would say after he died. Well, why not say it when he's alive?
Okay.
You know, so we had a wake for him before he died. And people stood up and said what they thought of him and liked him and so on and so forth. And he cried his way through his own wake, if you wish, you know. But at least he knew that people liked him, you know. And they were going to say that, but say it when he's alive.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, could you?
It's the best way to do it.
Can you hear?
But, you know, you've AD there, and it just crossed my mind listening to her, you know. I was very impressed with somebody who was interviewed recently about the feminist movement, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, that they seem to have achieved what they wanted, a lot of their goals. And the answer is no, they haven't, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And for instance, I talk to young women, say around the 30, 40s age, and they were never through the battles the feminists had to go through.
Okay.
Just for the right to be, you know. And to let that die at this point in time is not good for the feminist movement. There's still a terrible lot of work to do, you know.
And as you say that, John, like there's another call. I mentioned earlier in the promo with Shay, we obviously it's hard to predict on Liveline where any conversation will go, as in this one, or how long will it go on for. But one of the calls we've had today, John, in August, the Wednesday, the 24th of August, 2024, the day that Niall McCafferty died, nearly 3 years after your Marion died, nearly 15 years after Nuala died, we have a call from somebody. I attended Mass last Sunday in Dublin. Okay, it was a family memorial Mass. The reading from the altar by a man, obviously, from the book from Ezekiel. Sorry, give me the correct pronunciation. You remember, but anyway, Ezekiel, Joe. And this, the woman says, this was last week now. She heard this from the altar. The reading was abhorrent to women. They were talked about. The woman in the piece that was read from the altar was reduced to the idea of a prostitute. Where a baby girl is born in blood and despised. So I think you're right about all those battles never end. Helen Fawn. Helen, good afternoon. Sorry for holding you there. Joe at RT.E 51551. Helen, your contribution, please.
How are you, Joe?
Great.
I'm a volunteer with ADs to Noble Children International. Just two quick things. Niall was marvellously irreverent. She was a fantastic lady. On that convoy, I was flying out to meet them in Minsk, and I rang to see that Ady Ali and Niall need me to bring out anything from Ireland.
Okay.
Niall pipes up from the back of the ambulance in our fabulous Northern Ireland accent, "Would you bring me a few real Irish spuds? I'm sick of this effing food."
Okay.
And I did. I brought four spuds out to her, and you swear I brought the crown jewel, maybe not the crown jewels, a crock of gold. But roll on, about 10 days later, the convoy deliveries were finished. A lot of hard work done, unloading all the trucks, delivering ambulances, etc. A group of about 60 of us are back in Minsk. We're flying home to Ireland the next day.
Okay.
And Niall went off to buy a painting or something. Yeah. Anyhow, the translator comes rushing up to me to say Niall had been arrested by armed Belarusian guards. Came out of the restaurant I was in, and here's Niall, tiny little Niall, and these two big guys with guns and the whole lot. And she's roaring at them. That's not an effing gun.
Oh,
she said, "I've seen much bigger in Northern Ireland," and blah, 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 blah. So with the help of the translator, I tried to explain that this lady was a very famous writer in Ireland, a very important lady.
Yes, yes.
But maybe just a little bit eccentric and whatever. They quite happily handed Niall over to my care when I told them that we were leaving Belarus the next day. But fantastic memories with Ady Ali and others of Niall, and there's loads of stories. May she rest in peace. I'd say up above might be a bit lively with Nell's arrival there now.
Yeah. I wonder, thank you, Helen. Thank you so much. I wonder, John Clark, in all your time spent with Nell and Marion and Nuala, did Nell believe in the afterlife?
I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
I couldn't honestly tell you, you know. I think it was Niall, Nuala, Marion, of course, and some others that knew a lot about the church and the goings on. Knew them years and years before the public knew them. And if they had a religion, it was blinded by the activities of the church, the incumbents, you know.
Okay.
Marion made a speech to a lot of clerics in Glenstall, and the head of Glenstall, whose name escapes me at the moment, said to her years later, you know, he said, "I use that, your speech."
Mm-hmm.
It was a feminist speech or a pro-women speech, you know, to all my pupils so they will understand where women are coming from, you know. And the battle isn't over yet by a long, long Street, you know, the thoughtlessness of it, you know. So the feminist movement, as far as I'm concerned, is a very important part of female development and must continue, you know.
And society's development as well, as has been proven again and again and again. Okay, stay with it, John. More people want to join in and chime in after this break. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Margaret O'Connor is in Skibbereen. Margaret, your memories of Nell McCafferty. Yeah. Go ahead, Margaret.
Hello, Nell. Nell was a particular friend of my aunt up in Lahinch. They used to meet at the Merryman School with Marion Finucane and Nuala and Maeve Finchie and Mary Holland and all those people. But there was one story she told about buying a television. She was just a young one down from Derry. She went into the shop in Dublin. She had to actually rent the television. She didn't have the money. So the guy said, grand, filled all the forms. And then he said, we need a male signature. And she said, well, I don't have any male. So he said, your husband, brother? No, no. So she went to the door. She called in a man who was passing the door. And he signed it. And she was able to get her television. Now, the man was actually unemployed. If you look back to the early 70s, there was a lot of unemployment in Ireland. He was an unemployed man. He was able to sign and she got her television.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. And you probably remember the one on the Late Late Show. There was a talk about Mr. and Mrs. and Ms., you know, that changing, that thing. And one guy piped up and he said, right, what are we to call a manhole then? A person hole? And Maeve goes, or Nell goes, no, I just call it a lid if I were you.
Yeah,
and many, exactly. I have, you know, she was so wonderful. But she and my aunt in Lahinch were great friends now. It was a 15-year difference. And Nuala built a house up there, and Nell and Nuala used to be together. And one time they invited her up to a Neil Diamond concert. Ah. And Auntie Mary went up, and she brought her sleeping bag, and they sat on the ground. And, you know, it was just, I met her myself. I met the two of them. I was in Lahinch visiting my mother. I had two small girls. I went down to visit Auntie Mary, and these two women were sitting on the footpath with their feet out in the road and called out to me, she's not there, she'll be back in 5 minutes. So they said, come over and say hello. So I went over. Of course, I was wildly excited. I'm a real feminist myself, and I just love everything to do with them. And they said, come and say hello. I went over, and they were heading to Galway. They said, we were admiring you. Now, I was wearing a nice dress to impress my auntie. And they said, will you come to Galway with us for the afternoon and the evening? Your Auntie Mary is going. And I said, no, Joe, because I couldn't sort of, I had no mobile. There were no mobiles. I couldn't go and leave my poor mother minding my two babies. So I said, no. And I was always sorry. And so was my mother. She gave out stink to me for not going. It would have been such a, wonderful time with those two wonderful women. You know, and the feminist in me, of course, brought it all out. Anyway.
Great memories.
She led the way. She led the way.
But thanks indeed, that's Margaret O'Connor. But John Clark, Niall didn't suffer fools gladly, including your host today. I got the whip of it a few times. But I'm reading from two young women. We were at a repeal demo in Dublin in 2017. And Niall was standing beside us in the crowd. And she thought we were organisers because we were wearing repealed the repeal sweaters, and she gave out to us because the sound was so bad, and she thought we had some influence on this, and we weren't even the organisers, but she had a good go at us because the sound was so bad. She wasn't afraid. She spoke her mind.
And you know, to be truthful, sometimes she was wrong. You know,
good point. Very good point.
But you knew who you were dealing with, you know, one way or the other, you know. And she did speak her mind.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of, like somebody reading the lesson from whatever funeral that person was on, you know.
Yeah.
How unthinking, you know, how unthinking.
But the fascinating thing about Niall was, and it's a fascinating people who do speak their mind, yet still have a devilment in it and a bit of a sense of humour. They allowed you to speak your mind back to them.
Yeah.
I had no fear of arguing with Niall. No fear, because she had no fear of giving out to me, so I had no fear in answering back. But anyway, Rosita...
And you're dead right, you know, because she loved argument, you know, and it was grist to her mill. sometimes it was totally illogical. It was just emotional, but you knew who you were dealing with, you know?
Yeah. Rosita Sweetman. Rosita, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. Excuse me. Hi, Joe.
How are you today?
Okay, sad.
Yeah.
Sad day.
Because you were there, Rosita.
I was indeed, yeah, with founding the women's movement, yeah. With Nell. But I'm just listening to all the lovely things being said about Nell.
Okay.
But it's kind of been forgotten, I think.
Okay.
What a hard time Nell had.
Yeah.
You know, if you listen to people talking about her life, was as if she had this incredibly funny, champagne fueled life. But she actually paid a really high price for being so outspoken. Like, her books were pulped. She was dropped by the Irish Times. They took on her lover, Nuala Mhoilán, which rubbed salt in the wound. She was banned by RTE. She was dropped by News Talk. She got very, very isolated, and that was extremely painful for her.
And because, in fairness, Rosita, to everybody, including Nell. And Nell was on, and we can't go into the detail now, but Nell was on News Talk and she made some very disparaging comments about a politician, which were untrue. And News Talk, as far as I know, were sued, and substantially by that politician, and as was his or her right. And from then on, including RTE, we got a directive that Nell was not to be on any programme live. And that was about 15 years ago. And the only interview I've ever heard with Nell since has been recorded. But it was that incident over libel, those stupid remarks that she made. But anyway, these things happen, and these things
but
are dealt
with. But I think that part of it, to be fair, Joe, were like what I remember of Nell when she came down from Derry, like John Clark was saying, from the barricades, like from a war.
Yeah.
And she was so courageous. She didn't give a hang if some priest gave out to us, or some politician, or some old dad. She was fearless because she'd fought as a young working class woman. She'd fought a fight, and she found us very meek and mild down here. And we got huge courage and energy from Nell.
Yeah.
And I think she put it up to a lot of Southerners, particularly it was very, very difficult, I think, for Northerners. There was a terrible war going on, and mostly here in the South, we didn't want to know. And that really tore at Nell's heart.
Okay. But stay with us, Rosita. I have one break to take, but just to say that incident that I spoke about where Nell, you say Nell was banned from RT Live and banned from News Talk, Nell was wrong what she said. She was simply wrong. And as John Clark said, that should be remembered as well. Nell was wrong in those remarks.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. By the way, those clips, those wonderful clips, and I listened to so many more than this morning from Brenda Donoghue's programme called Going Home with Nell. With Nell. That programme in full will be repeated tonight on RT Radio 1 at 10 p.m. Last words, 80. AD, give me your memory of Nell in 12 words or fewer, as the fella said, of being rude.
Joe, Nell was a very complex human being, which also made her very exciting, very interesting.
Okay.
And she had a fire in the belly. And that is something that will be a memory and a legacy.
Okay, Rosita Sweetman.
All of us.
Thank you, AD. Rosita Sweetman, 12 words or fewer.
I think Nell put it up to everyone that she met to be honest. That was her passion.
Okay.
Was honesty.
And to John Clark, finish with a man. I'll get it in the neck. But the last word from a man, John.
Sadness, Joe. With great sadness. I don't like her dying. I leave it at that.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Home in on end-of-season savings on bedding, curtains, wallpapers and more. In-store and online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.